Hello and welcome to our latest podcast episode here at Bradford Hate Crime Alliance. Today we're joined by Tom Gaffney and Bernard Cunningham from Leedsgate, where they support members of the Gypsy Traveller community. Gypsy Travellers continue to be among the most marginalised communities in our society. They have an average life expectancy of 50 in comparison to the now national average of over 80, which demonstrates a gulf of inequality, specifically in accessing health services. Thomas and Bernard really speak with searing honesty about the challenges the community faces and understanding why this particular community is so marginalised in our society in this day and age, as well as looking at the issues surrounding hate crime and the Gypsy Traveller community itself. So without further ado, here's Tom and Bernard. Well, today I'm joined by Tom and Bernard from Leedsgate. Thank you so much for joining me. If you can just tell me a little bit about who you are, what you do, and how you ended up working for Leedsgate. Tom, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so my name is Tom Gaffney. I'm the services manager at Leedsgate. So I've been at Leedsgate for about 2 years, coming up to 2 years now. Mm-hmm. I've always worked in like children's homes. Before I worked in living care teams, I've always worked in kind of caring roles, working with families, working with children. And I was kind of just ready for a change in career, really. I wasn't really looking for anything in particular, and then I saw this job advertised. It was originally for a team leader. It was part of kind of Leedsgate plan to kind of grow. It's kind of, So the team that I'm situated in, it offers more of the one-to-one advocacy support for the community. So that kind of spans and covers wide range. So we do a lot of work in terms of the advocacy team around kind of welfare rights, benefits, helping people to income the maximisation, helping people to access accommodation, access health services, helping families and children with accessing education. It's just whatever the needs of the individuals or families that kind of come through the door. So I've kind of seen a lot of change already in my 2 years. So I was a team leader. I've now moved up to services manager. So in terms of my team, it's growing very quickly. We kind of offer the advocacy, Leeds, Wakefield, and Bradford, mainly. However, we're starting to kind of do a lot more work in Kirklees, and Cordell, trying to reach the community there.
Yeah. And Bernard, yourself?
I'm, from the community, so I'm a gypsy, and I've been working at Leedsgate now nearly 2 years. I've always had a big interest, so my job role is I do mental health and suicide prevention. I've also got lived experience of suicide ideation, and I just wanted to take this job role because I want to really reach the community and help others and help them have a better understanding on what it means, and that to see, because there's a big stigma around mental health within the community. I just want to show that, you know, even though it's for it not to be shown as a weakness, but rather a strength for people to talk about, and just to get a fact that to get over that, you know, it's okay not to be okay, and just to be able to reach more people and support more people from within the community.
Yeah, it's so important, and it's a massive thing that a lot of people who experience hate crime deal with. And we'll get to that, but if you could just talk a little bit more about what Leedsgate does, because it's part of a nationwide organisation, isn't it, and what that role is, and the importance of it actually for the Gypsy Traveller community within the UK, and specifically for you guys within West Yorkshire.
Yeah, so I mean, the overall aim that we've got embedded in Leedsgate is to improve the overall quality of life for the community. And even though obviously with the title Leedsgate, that's because that's where originally it was set up, we do cover West Yorkshire. However, we do have, you know, quite close relationships with other charities that are set up like ours, up and down the country, like just for example these Gate Hertfordshire, there's York Travellers Trust, FFT, there are several more. So obviously the work that we deliver, you know, in West Yorkshire, we do aim to share all our learning, all our projects up and down the country. In regards to hate crime, last year it wasn't myself, but it was one of my colleagues who was funded as a hate crime trainee. She attended the CPS national strategic meeting last year. Along with the manager before me, so they kind of attended that with other charities, obviously looking at hate crime as a whole, on the impact and it has, and what the CPS's role is in that, and trying to improve that kind of procedures and journey for people that are reporting hate crime, what that looks like, you know, when it does go to the court.
I mean, in terms of what the Gypsy Traveller community has to deal with, for me, looking from the outside looking in, you are fed a certain stereotype of what this community is and what it represents by the media. It's demonised by the media. And it's, there's a pecking order. If you look at all the sort of like the different minorities that are affected by hate crime, there seems to be like a pecking order of, you know what I mean? It was like status of these minorities. And it seems to me that the GRT community, the Gypsy Travellers and the Romas as well, tend to come very much at the bottom, because everybody just wants to just look down on them. This very common theme that, you know, people that are oppressed will obviously try and find a way to be the oppressor of somebody else. Why? Why is this such a misunderstanding and such massive stigma surrounding the Gypsy Traveller community? Because that, to me, is that surely is part of the root cause surrounding all hate crime towards that community. What on earth can we do to change it?
Well, in terms of, I always refer to it's quite a direct and kind of not really the same, but yeah, traveller movement brought this thing in like a report in 2017, and they called the hate crime that community faced, called it the last acceptable form of racism. You know, this is 2017, 5 years ago. You know, and it's still nothing's really changed since then. I mean, I always kind of look at what I think about what I've learned in these 2 years at Leesgate, and kind of I look at what kind of I knew about the community before I came to this role. So I kind of sometimes try to see it in the eyes of someone that I've never actually met someone from the community, mm-hmm. and I had any interaction whatsoever. So like before I came to the role, I think I'd only worked with one family from the community in one of my previous roles. So my like knowledge and understanding was very, very limited. So I kind of think of the public services, so people that I've never, like I said, had any interaction, where does their understanding or insight into the community come? And in reality, it either comes from someone telling you something about the community, which tends to be negative,
misinformed.
Or it is through the media outlets, whether it's newspapers, whether it's some of these TV programs that comes out, and obviously we could probably preach on some of the recent ones and how the community felt on them. So if your only outlet of information is, like I say, misinformed and negative over you know, months, years, you know, people saying, oh, I've had this experience with the community, you know, you kind of, over time, like, the public can develop that kind of way of thinking.
I think from a very early age, it's like something that's always been there, because I lived roadside most of my life,
and
I've lived on sites, lived in houses, and it seems to be like wherever you go, you feel excluded. And school wasn't very good, because it feels like, you know, wherever you go, it's like you face some kind of racism, discrimination, or stereotype. And wouldn't it be good in an ideal world if, like, everybody could just, you know, because we're a small minority, we don't make up a big percentage of the population, and it's sometimes you feel like, you know, you live a good life, you do everything right, but something happens within the community, and it's automatically you get tied with the same brush, and it's you feel like, you know, sometimes even though you're a good person, you try and live a good, respectable, a good life, sometimes it's hard to get away from. And just the fact that, you know, we are a protected ethnic minority, I didn't know that until about 4 or 5 years ago, and that comes as a big shock to me.
I think actually it's a really good point, Bernard. Yeah. I think probably a lot of people listening won't realise that the GRT communities are protected. And a lot of a lot of the reason for that, I believe, is this what we call othering, where if you kind of just push aside a certain group of people into the corner for long enough, you start to regard them as less than human or less human than yourself, and therefore that breeds into a sense of worth. And so I think as a society, what we do, we value some people more than others. And like I said about that pecking order, if you're kind of looking at it from that kind of perspective, we're just kind of othering all these people. So then people are like, why would they be protected?
The thing is, like, from any kind of minority, you just want to be considered the same as everybody else.
Equal.
You want
we're all human beings,
equal,
exactly.
And you know that, you know, we're all individual. You know, just because somebody from the community does something, doesn't mean we all do that. Do you know what I mean?
And of course.
It's just getting that across that everybody's unique and everybody's individual people. And you get good people in some walks of life.
In every community, in every walk of life, in every postcode, wherever you are, you'll always find good, you'll always find bad. That's life. That's human nature, exactly. It's got nothing to do with one particular community as opposed to another community. I think that's really, really important. To stress. I mean, so what are the issues that you, on a day-to-day basis now? You mentioned the fact that really nothing has changed in terms of awareness, better information, more tolerance. I hate the word tolerance. I've said this before on these podcasts. I don't like it. Tolerance indicates that we're just going to put up with and not say something nasty about it. Actually, what we really should be promoting is complete acceptance of each other. No, so you have to sort of like go and live that lifestyle or whatever, but we have to accept each other and accept that we have the right to be different. And I think that's where it all kind of goes horribly wrong. And then to start banning this tolerant word around and like, well, I'll tolerate this. I'm like, well, actually, no, I'd rather you just accepted me. And then that's good enough. I'll, you know, tolerate. Yeah, I'll leave it. Thanks.
I've found like in times of my life that I have had to tell, not reveal what I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you tell people, you feel that change.
Yeah, straight away.
Straight away.
Okay, and what does that look like? And that's really interesting. So if when in those examples, when you have done that, when you have revealed your identity, what has that difference then looks like? Is it how you're treated? Is it the way you're spoken to?
You get treated differently, but it's not something that's obvious. It's, it's people just back away and then you kind of lose touch with them.
So they're consciously like just then they kind of pull themselves away.
Yeah, you feel it. It's hard to explain, and that's, it's just, and you can't help what you're born. You can be born into
exactly.
Any kind of walk of life.
We are who
and
we are.
That's just who you are, you know.
And, but that's the essence of hate crime, is that's the whole point of it. And that's why people, I bang on about this all the time, is that people completely dismiss hate crime a lot of the time as being, it's just low level stuff, or people, you just need to grow a thicker skin, it's just name calling, it's just banter, and that awful, awful word. No, it's not. It's really not. You're being attacked for who you are, literally who you are, and we all are who we are, and there's nothing you can do to change that unless you end up living a life whereby you spend all your energies hiding who you are. But in order to be accepted, but that's exhausting.
I believe that's got, it causes a direct
huge
impact on your mental health.
Yeah, massively.
And there's a big, massive, there's a lot of people from the community that suffers with a mental health.
Yeah.
And it's partly because of hate crime, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, I completely believe it.
And it's not something that started with them. A lot of people I speak to from the community and yourself started with their parents before them. It's kind of going back years and years and years, isn't it?
To like that generational thing.
And one thing you've said a lot to me is the normalisation that yourself and people kind of normalise that hate crime behaviour towards them.
So this is sometimes, the reason a lot of gypsies and travellers don't report hate crime is because it becomes so normal. So from a very young age, you're brought up with the idea that this is just the way it is. You can't do nothing about it.
Exactly. That's it. It's just part of your lot in life, and you just have to just crack on. It's just terrible. And people honestly still believe that because they don't want to have to deal with the problem. They don't think it should be recognised as a problem. I mean, when the, just last year, when the government sort of looked into hate crime legislation and particular recommendations were made to change things and hopefully what we thought was going to make things a lot better, when they put that out to sort of consultation, and then anybody's free to kind of like just write in with their recommendations for change or what they feel. The majority of people that wrote in actually would thought that we should just do away with hate crime legislation altogether. That's terrifying that people actually think that, that's where we're at, and they think it's actually wrong, and they see that as then it's kind of like reverse discrimination. It's like, well, what why do they get protected and we're not? But that's just ignorance. We're all protected. But you have to recognise that some people in society face much worse persecution than other people. And if we're all on the same page that we all want to live in a fair society where we're all treated equally, we have to protect some people more than others because that's the society we live in.
Yeah, and I was reading an article the other day, I can't remember off the top of my head, it did say in terms of online hate speech that the Egyptian travel community have all communities and all the ethnic backgrounds, they are targeted the most. Yeah. And again, like, doesn't have to be direct and about an individual.
No.
What you do tend to find online, it's kind of group, kind of hate crime.
Sure.
And that's a lot of times how individuals, but also like newspapers, get away because they're not actually naming an individual.
Yep.
It's group discrimination. And for me, that's one of, you know, if you look at, especially GRT community, how it's been so normalised within the community, like Bernard said.
Mm-hmm. Because the media does it. The media tells people that if the media is going to treat people that way, it gives everybody else that's reading those newspapers a free rein to do exactly the same.
Yeah. And we did, there was an article last year, I think, by The Independent, and the title was, it's about time we stop pandering to Egyptian travellers. So this is by I researched him. I think he's quite a well-known journalist within the field. So he's been allowed to write this article.
Yeah.
And me and my colleague Cinder, who was in the hate crime, we kind of wrote an article around that impact that has. Because I think how many people read that newspaper?
A lot.
How many services and managers of all this read this day in, day out? And again, that's seen as acceptable. And it's if the rights and legislation was to be taken away, then look where we're at right now.
I know, exactly.
Then what would that lead to next?
Horrendous.
What would be next?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're living in scary times, for sure. Yeah. In terms of Bernard, what's your lived experience then as a gypsy, as a man from that community? What sort of, if you're willing to share, and I think the power of lived experience and sharing lived experience is that somebody will be listening who doesn't want to speak out or maybe feels like they can't. And by listening to somebody else and saying, this is what I've gone through and I'm speaking out about it because I know that this is the only way we can actually do something about it. It's really, that's what's so empowering about it. So if there's anything that you can share.
I think that I've lived in many different places in my life. I've lived roadside, I've lived in houses, I've lived on caravan sites. And I've suffered, where it seems like wherever you go, you're always going to be targeted. But I suppose if I was talking to somebody right now and I was thinking, well, what can I do? Unless you open up and get your story here, unless you get that out there, then nobody's... If you just keep it to yourself and never report anything, nothing's ever going to change.
No.
That'd be what I'd like to say to that person, if there's anybody...
No, that's you absolutely bang on. Nothing's going to change until, as a society, we all take responsibility for it. One of the things that, and I know that's something that hopefully you guys are going to be able to work with this on is the you know, promoting the hate crime app and giving people the opportunity to report hate crime completely anonymously, so nobody from your community needs to know about it, nobody else needs to know about it, nobody needs to know who you are, but we'll know where you are and we'll know what's happened. because you'll be able to tell us that information, and that gives us an indication of what might be going on, and you can record, you know, you can tell us what the crime is and why it's been committed, but we will never need to know who you are. I think for a lot of people that can be more empowering. It's just, it's the fear, isn't it? It's the fear of dealing with the police, it's fear of dealing with the services that are in place, and the way that they feel they're not going to be believed, they're going to be demonized, they're going to be mistreated, because there's a history of and evidence to show that that has happened. So it's not, you know, it's not fairy tale stuff. That's the reality of it, and so it's completely understandable. So in terms of moving forward, it's how do we build those bridges between the GRT community, the police, people like ourselves here at Bradford Hate Crime Alliance, to try and work together to kind of build the awareness to encourage people to come forward and speak out.
Yeah, and just like you said, just probably about the relationship with the police, that is kind of a bit of a blanket of mistrust from a lot of the community members. Like I said, that is a lot of historical and stuff.
And it's not just the GRT community. No. It's many different communities feel the same way.
And I kind of worry more so as we go on, especially when it comes to resources, when it comes to the police. There's already a thing of, like I say, not just this community, you know, most communities, that when you report something, like what happens next, you know, and then people say, actually I reported it, nothing did happen, so what's the point doing it again, you know? And that's kind of where we're at, really. But in terms of like the platform around the app, these are the things that give that anonymous factor to, you know, you don't have to kind of and I kind of think, for me, there's two sides to it. Obviously we want that kind of someone to feel like something is being done, but even if people want to report it and actually saying yeah, I'm gonna report it, but I don't want anything to happen,
and that's what we can now facilitate. And that's what we recognize exactly. So we don't need to, and the downside is that we can't then support you. We can't kind of like get in touch and go, right, do you want to talk, do you want to, can we refer you on to some counseling services, and like as you mentioned, the mental health aspect of the impact from hate crime, and really supporting people, because they need support, and there's no shame in that. There's no shame in asking for help and taking help, but that might be a step too far for some people, and some people might just need to just, it's just, at least it's one step forward, isn't it, to be able to kind of go, right, I've told somebody about it, but nobody's going to phone me, nobody's going to come and visit me, I don't need to deal with any of that kind of side of it.
I think even this app and knowing that I have reported it, just by knowing that I'm having that down, by knowing that I've done something rather than nothing, is a big step in the right direction.
Absolutely, massively, yeah.
I think the key to starting to build relationships with kind of all services that are involved in the journey of hate crime discrimination is kind of linking in, like you've done with ourselves, linking in with the services that already have the trust in the communities, which is kind of what we do day in, day out, really. You know, we try to partner up with so many services to help break down them barriers to services being accessed. Kind of what you know, it doesn't just have to be us, it could be if any community, if it's, say, for example, a trusted nurse involved, for example, like in Leeds. You know, we do have a specific kind of outreach nurses, so they have a lot of trust. So it's about providing these professionals already involved with the toolkits to actually make them aware of the hate crime they face, which, you know, a lot of these services that are already involved in communities should know. But however, it might be if a nurse, or if it's in someone from education working close with a family, for them to be aware of actually kind of how they can support the families to report hate crime and stuff, rather than families and individuals just being very reliant on that one trusted service. That would always be a really key point to start with. Bradford Hate Crime Alliance, the police, we really to looking with a service that already have that trust.
But also then, we as an organisation, we recognise that it's not enough to kind of say, well, we're here, just drop us a line, give us a call. We've got to work towards building that trust as well. and working with you guys to kind of make sure people know who we are and that we are absolutely there to support people, and we're there to advocate for people and to help them. And we mean no harm, and certainly don't want to pressure people into anything that they don't want to do. But we are here and we can be trusted. But that takes time.
Yeah, I think, as you say, it takes a lot for somebody from the community to build up trust with services, because even from a young age, I was taught that, you know, when you do go to like a doctor or any kind of service, my mum and dad always said, don't say what you are. If you say what you are, you'll be treated differently. So just don't mention anything like that. And this is, and it's sad really, because this is the reason why, you know, there's suicides within the community, but sometimes it might not be put down as a statistic or anything because of the same reason.
How serious is that kind of outcome in the community? Is it certainly more, it sounds like it's more widespread than certainly
a lot
people
of the
really
time,
aware of.
A lot of the time people get so bad with the mental health, mostly it reaches crisis point before people get to that point where the, you know, it usually gets to crisis point before people get the need in.
Yeah, and is that because there is this reticence to come forward? They just don't want to get involved with the services, they don't trust the services, or they feel they're going to be prejudiced against because of who they are?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Right, okay. It's difficult, isn't it? How do we move forward from there then? How do we get to a point where, as a community, people can just sort of say, yeah, I'm not okay. I need help.
Yeah, I think it's also nice to see a regular face.
Like absolutely. Yeah,
that's regular. You can build up that trust.
Mm-hmm. It's so important.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing that I picked up all my time at Gate, is that constant trusted face is kind of what is needed with anything really. We look at all, not just our hate crime work, but all our projects as we go along. Once it's that trusted person through the door, people do actually start to open up.
Yeah.
And I kind of think as we've grown as an organisation, we've seen people approaching us more, especially about the mental health, suicide and stuff, because, you know, we've had the same two people in the role for quite some time now. It is that constant in life that they know they can trust.
It was very hard for me also being able to talk about mental health and suicide ideation because of the stigma that there is towards it within the community. But just being able to get that across and being able to say, look, it's okay, I've been there, you know. And we all get what's not, you know, you go through things in life, and anybody can get to that point. It's just about knowing that there's something that you can get that support and it's okay.
And that's what makes this so difficult. There's not only the issues surrounding other communities and the fear of treatment from other communities, but there's also that sort of stigma within the community itself regarding these issues, regarding speaking out about hate crime, regarding admitting that we've got mental health difficulties and we need help, things like that. There's a lot that needs overcoming. Yeah. There's a lot to do, and conversations like this with you guys today is part of that process, I hope, and that when we can get this on air, and hopefully people will be able to listen to it and just recognise that. My email pinging there. Just recognise that this is the way forward. Being silent and sitting and being miserable and leading, you know, existences where we're afraid of who we are, we're afraid of people finding out who we are, we're afraid of admitting that we don't feel right. You know, there's help out there, and you can live a better life. We all can. We're all capable of doing it, and it's something that we're all entitled to, that we don't have to just keep suffering just because of who we are. We do have the right to be treated better and to kind of call it out and go, this is not okay.
Yeah.
I don't have to feel like this about it. I don't have to be ashamed of myself because of who I am, because of who I was born. That's just who I am. That's just who we are as people, and the sooner we can get to that place, the better. But it's small steps. We recognise that.
Yeah, I think just talking about more small steps, it's early intervention.
Yeah,
is that, you know, I would say like kind of what one thing we did plan on doing. I think, well, and I still want to go down this direction once we have someone in place, you know, as a new hate crime advocate, mm-hmm. is to look at how we could do some sessions and do some work with our youths, with the children, yeah. Not just the children and teenagers that access our service, but going out to schools,
yeah.
potentially. Do you know, we'd have to go to, you know, we have to go to a school where we know there's some community members in there, but just going...
Oh, any school.
Yeah, any school, just, and I think, and again, it doesn't have to be so direct around hate crime, but a bit of that background and understanding from children actually around what it means to be GRT, a bit about the lifestyle, mm-hmm. you know, obviously the nomadic way of life.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be a really, really good place to start. Yeah, I kind of think, kind of tooling...
education is the key to all of it. It really is. Yeah. And as you said, it's not necessarily, but you don't have to have representatives of the community in those schools. They'll be bias.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we do in the school work that we do, we talk about unconscious bias a lot with kids, and they don't understand what that is. And there's a, you know, but that's what's so important, is they recognise that we all have unconscious bias. It's because of the way we're brought up and things that we may be told. We referenced it earlier on, where do people's ideas about the gypsy community come from? It's from what you read and what you're told, and that generates bias. And so people will have automatic biases when they hear about something that the gypsy community have done. They'll make a judgment on that based on their bias. The only way to undo that is to be aware that we actually have it. So a lot of the work that we do with kids is recognizing that and how we all form groups. And we all tend to need to feel like we're a bit better than everybody else, because it's human nature. But then it's just recognising why and owning it and dealing with it. Because if you've got prejudice against somebody else, that's not their problem, it's yours. Yeah. And that's what we've all got to recognise. Do you know what I mean? If you've got bad feelings about a group of people just because of who they are, that literally is your problem, mate, and you need to go away and sort yourself out and deal with it. And that's how we move forward. So, I mean, it's you're absolutely right. It's just vital work. So I wish you all the very, very best with that. I hope you can get into the schools and get talking to them the way that you spoke to me today, because these are the conversations that need to be had, and to kind of really build that understanding and break down those stigmas and stereotypes that surround all our different communities in society. So, guys, thank you so much for coming today and talking to me. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for having us. It's been good.
If you would like any further information on the work that Leedsgate do, then please head over to their website, www.leedsgate.co.uk. That's www.leedsgate.co.uk. Or you can give them a call on 0113 240 2444. That's 0113 240 2444. As ever, if you've got any feedback for us, then please don't hesitate to get in touch. You can call us on 0800 169 1664. Our number then, 0800 169 1664. If you've got any feedback, or indeed you'd like to report a hate crime, please get in touch. You can also email us at information@bradfordhatecrimealliance.org.uk. That's information@bradfordhatecrimealliance.org.uk. Until next time, take care.